You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We get to continue our series, Hope in the Wilderness, Practical Insights from the Book of Numbers, book from Concordia Publishing House and Dr. Lessing, in just a moment. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Reed Lessing. He's professor of theology and ministry, the Paul Edwin F. and Esther L. Lesch Chair of Old Testament Studies. He's the director of the pre-seminary program and director of the Center for Biblical Studies at Concordia University St. Paul. And in his spare time, he writes books, multiple books. This one is Hope in the Wilderness, Practical Insights from the Book of Numbers from Concordia Publishing House. Dr. Lessing, welcome back.
Good to be here.
This is a fun series. I'm enjoying working through Numbers. When we first started, we asked the question, why Numbers? Now I think we have a clear picture why. There's a lot packed into the Book of Numbers, and there's a lot to unpack as we read through this Book of Numbers. Today, we're going to take a look at chapters 12 through 14 in your book, which I believe takes us through like chapters 20 to 22 in the Book of Numbers. So where does this take us in the history of God and his people?
We're really getting toward the end of the 40 years in the wilderness, right? And why 40? Because that's the number of days the spies were spying out the promised land in chapter 13 of Numbers. So the judgment in chapter 14 is, well, you're going to spend a year in the wilderness for every day the spies spied out Canaan. So we're coming to the end of the 40 years, all right? So Numbers chapter 20 is really, I mean, one of the worst chapters in the book in terms of setbacks and disappointments and death, right? So Miriam, right? Moses' older sister dies at the beginning of chapter 20. And Aaron, right? Moses' older brother dies at the end of chapter 20. And in between, Moses is barred from the promised land. So Numbers chapter 20 is really kind of the last leg, right, of all this negative judgment and death and prohibiting from the promised land. Once we get to chapter 21, really at the end of 21, then Israel is going to start having some successful military engagements, not with people who are in the, I don't know, it's called the Kis-Jordan, right? From the Jordan River west, right? Jericho, Ai, Hazor, not those people. That's going to be in the book of Joshua, right? But they do have some successful victories at the end of chapter 21 against the Transjordanian people, the Amorites. So really, chapter 20 is kind of the valley of the shadow of death. And 21, we begin to see hints of resurrection and hope.
Yeah, let's talk about that incident with Moses and the rock and water. What is happening here?
This is a 2.0 is what I call it. because we have 1.0, the water, in chapter 17 of Exodus, right? And both places, it's kind of confusing. Both places are called Meribah. Right? But they're not the same location, right? The first Meribah is before they're at Mount Sinai, right? In chapter 19 of Exodus. The second Meribah is really getting close to the plains of Moab toward the promised land. So that might be confusing for Bible readers and people listening to this. There's Meribah 1 and Meribah 2. And we're at Meribah 2 in Numbers chapter 20. It's the same deal. God tells Moses, because the people are thirsty, right? Strike the rock. Water will come out of it. People will drink. There are several subtle things that Moses does that is going to be his undoing. The most prominent one is going to be in verses 10 and 11 in Numbers 20. Quoting from these verses, Moses, "Hear now, you rebels. Shall we bring water for you out of this rock?" No. We. That's what primarily did him in. We. It's not Moses and Aaron run the show. It's Yahweh, right? I can't help but think of a verse in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5. We do not preach ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. Moses didn't get the memo, right? He is taking responsibility for the miracle, right? And it says in verse 11, Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice. God didn't say strike it twice. God just says strike it. God didn't say lift up his hand, but Moses lifts up his hand. Kind of minutia, we might think, right? What's the big deal? And yet, right? As soon as Moses is going against, right, what God has clearly stated with the we and striking the rock twice and lifting up his hand, this is the end for Moses. But not the absolute end. Never with Yahweh, right? The end is never the end. It might look like the end, right? He's barred from the promised land. He dies on Mount Nebo. God buries him in Deuteronomy 34. But, right, Moses makes it. How do we know that? Man of Transfiguration, right? Who's there? Jesus is, Peter, James, and John. Elijah's there. And of course, we all know, so is Moses. There's redemption. This is a wonderful story. You know, you got to kind of keep reading along in the Bible. But Moses makes it. It's not like a ghost of Moses on the Mount Transfiguration. Moses is there. And yet, right, he's not going to go there with the Israelites. He's going to go there with a glorified body, right, in the Mount of Transfiguration. So it's still a very sad chapter. Miriam goes down. Moses is barred for a season. And Aaron dies, all in chapter 20.
Out of curiosity, Moses was barred from the land of, from the promised land. Why? Why did God bar him from going to that? And this is something I've been waiting for forever.
Yeah, it does seem like the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. Right. And so there's no real kind of escape hatch on this. It's not like, well, read, you know, in chapter 27 of Numbers, and then we find out what Moses was really thinking at this time, and now we understand. We don't have a text. All we have are these events in Numbers 20, right? We do have this idea. James chapter 3, verse 1 comes to mind. My brothers, not many of you should be teachers because you will be judged more strictly. And James there is talking about the pastoral office there without going into a lot of detail, but he's talking about pastors. We could expand that to Christian leaders, no doubt. So there's a higher expectation of Christian leaders, right? We certainly have that in 1st and Timothy and Titus, for example. So we could use those kinds of New Testament verses to help us understand a little bit more about what's going on in Numbers chapter 20.
You expand on the rock very beautifully in this chapter. Talk a little bit about the rock, Moses striking the rock, but also Christ being our rock.
Right. Yeah. So I try to use in my book this metaphor of putting together IKEA furniture, right? Which I don't know if you've ever done that. I've done that a couple times, right? Put A into C and make sure B snaps to D. And you understand. Just it seems as though there's like, yeah, a directional book that has like 28 pages. I'm just trying to put a bed together, a dresser drawer. Anyway, so it is a little bit complicated, all right, but not much. We're just do A, B, C, D, E. Like we're putting together IKEA furniture. A, all right, in chapter 17, when we have the Meribah 1.0, right, Moses striking the rock, God says he's going to stand on the rock, all right? He's going to stand on the rock in chapter 17 of Exodus. So as Moses hits the rock, he goes through who? Now, I never really picked that up in my reading of Exodus 17 until I was working on this book on Numbers. But it's right there. All right. So Moses somehow is going to strike God when he strikes the rock. Okay. And water comes out of it, right? So there are several psalms. Psalm 78 would be an example where God is called Israel's rock. Israel's rock. Deuteronomy 32 calls God Israel's rock four times. And then you've got this verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, when we started these series of interviews, I said, wow, Paul in 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 13, really refers to the book of Numbers a lot. And in verse 4 of 1 Corinthians 10, Paul says, the rock that followed Israel, that rock was Christ. That rock was Christ. So this is a foreshadowing, right? This being Numbers 20 and Exodus 17, a foreshadowing of Christ. Christ, right, gives us living water. But for that to happen, he has to be struck. So now we're back with God's presence, right? Standing on the rock in Exodus chapter 17. When is Jesus struck and water comes out? Well, we all know it's in John's gospel. John 19, verse 34, the Roman spear thrust. There's a sudden flow of blood and water. And without going into all of the specifics of how this is working in John's gospel, in terms of understanding Exodus 17 and Numbers 20, this is a wonderful foreshadowing, right, of Christ's death on Good Friday, being struck and water coming out. What kind of water? Living water. So there's, you know, putting the furniture together, putting this together. There's probably 5 or 6 steps. I've gone through them rather quickly. But Paul actually calls Christ the rock, right? And we know that water came out of the rock. Just so John's gospel is going to highlight that. So we put Paul and John together with Moses, and we have a wonderful promise that out of the death of Jesus comes living water.
We're taking a look at hope in the wilderness. We're looking at the book of Numbers today with the Reverend Dr. Reed Lessing. We'll continue the conversation in this series in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are in the book Hope in the Wilderness, Practical Insights from the Book of Numbers from Concordia Publishing House with Dr. Reed Lessing. And we are in Numbers chapters 20 to 22 today, working through chapters 12 to 14 in the book Hope in the Wilderness. So we've talked about the rock. We've talked about Moses and the Promised Land, not really getting to go there, being barred from that. What about that? We have, I think in these chapters, we also have a few more stories, the bronze serpent. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, this is the first time, actually, in the whole book that the Israelites actually confess their sins. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Now, they do confess their sins at the end of chapter 14, right? When God says, okay, you know, you're going to have to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. They say, we're so sorry. And then they immediately disobey God's command, and they try to attack Canaanites, and they suffer a huge defeat. So we can't really count that confession at the end of chapter 14 in Numbers, because they didn't mean it, right? We're sorry, but we're going to take things into our own hands. And they suffer a massive defeat at a place called Korma, which means destruction, right? So pretty apt place to be destroyed as an army. So the first genuine confession of sins is going to take place after God sends the fiery serpents, because they're complaining again. And they say, we have sinned against you, God, and Moses. Took them almost 40 years to say, I, a poor, miserable sinner, confess unto thee all my sins and iniquities. So then what happens, right? Confession ends with absolution, right? So of all things, God tells Moses to take a bronze serpent, right? Take a piece of artwork, right, of a serpent, of a snake, put on a pole. Everyone who looks at it when they're bitten by a snake will live. And you say, wait a minute. The snakes were the judgment. They were the God's curse for the people grumbling yet again. How can the curse become a blessing, right? And you know, when do we first have a serpent in the Bible? Well, Genesis 3, verse 1, and we understand, right, especially in places like Isaiah 27 and Revelation 12 and 20, that the serpent is the devil and Satan. So why in the world would you look at something, right, that's cursed to be blessed, right? That's what's going on. Well, we kind of laid the foundation before this, right, in our earlier discussions on the book of Numbers, where we have this wonderful verse in Nehemiah 13, verse 2, where Nehemiah says, our God turned the curse into a blessing. That is actually the story of the Bible, right? Right. All the curses God is going to undo and use for his salvific purposes, right? Joseph, for example, Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. He said, you meant for evil, God meant for good. See, you meant to curse me, right? By throwing me in the swallowless pit and selling me to some Midianites all the way to Egypt in Genesis 37. God turned the curse into a blessing, right? This is what Paul says, Romans 8, 28. God works all things together for good. Not that all things are good, but God works all things together for good. So the curse of the serpent is going to be the means of salvation. So just think about that. Right? What does Paul say in Galatians 3:13? He says that Christ became a curse for us, right? Because cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, quoting from the last verse in Deuteronomy chapter 21. So the curse of Calvary, right? The curse of the cross, the horrible, horrific, bloody execution of the Son of God has become the greatest blessing for humanity. Because he's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. So there you go, right? Why a serpent? Because this gets at the heart of what Luther often called the great exchange. Christ is cursed, I'm blessed. Christ thirsts, right? Thirsts, right? John 19, 28, I thirst. And we get living water, right? Christ hangs in darkness, we walk in the light of life. Christ dies, we live. So it's part of this greater exchange that we see taking place classically, right, at the end of 2 Corinthians 5:21. He who had no sin became sin for us so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. That's full throttle gospel, right?
Yeah, it's great. That is such a strong connection between these stories. It's so good. It's so good. What do we learn about Israel's relationship with other nations in these episodes, in this section of Numbers?
Well, we learn that the nations are to bless Israel, all right? And this takes us back. I mean, these are programmatic verses in the Bible, Genesis 12, 2 and 3. Right? I've already talked a little bit about in you, right? All the families will be blessed. That's God's promise to Abraham in chapter 12, verse 3 of Genesis. But earlier, right, in verse 2 of Genesis 12, those who curse you, I'll curse. Those who bless you, I will bless. So if you curse Israel, okay, God will curse you. If you bless Israel, God will bless you. So the nations who are kind to Israel, okay, God's going to bless. Those who turn against Israel, God is going to curse, especially in chapter 21, right? Before you get to the bronze serpent narrative, the Edomites don't show favor to the Israelites. And so the Israelites have to go all the way around the land of Edom. And so the Edomites eventually are going to find themselves on the wrong side of history. And there would be several judgments against the Edomites. There's a whole book of judgment against them. It's called the Book of Obadiah, right? Against Esau and Edom. So that's what we learn, right? Israel then is going to be the pivot of human history. Either bless Israel and you're blessed, or you curse Israel and you're cursed. So the billion-dollar question right now today is what? Where are God's promises to Israel located? Are they located in the 1948 state of Israel? No. Are they located in the person and work of Jesus? Absolutely yes.
I want to talk about Balaam and Balak, but I know that's going to take us a little bit into our next episode as well. So before we talk about that, remind me again where we are in our journey to the Promised Land, in this timeline to the Promised Land.
Yeah, timeline, we're about 1404 BC, okay? Because Israel's left Egypt in 44 BC, essentially. So it had been 40 years. And in terms of geography, we're on the plains of Moab, all right? So we are just east of the Dead Sea. And this is where we meet these two very colorful characters, Balak and Balaam.
All right, let's learn about a little bit about Balaam and Balak. What do you want us to know in this? We've got about 2 minutes or so, two or three minutes.
Yeah. So Balak is a king of Moab. Moab would be on the plains of Moab, right? And Balak is freaking out because these Israelites, wherever they go, they defeat their enemies, right? And there's a horde that has come out of the land of the Nile, Balak said. So Balak, the Moabite, is going to form a coalition with the Midianites. That's pretty important for several more narratives in the book of Numbers. So the Moabites and Midianites don't know what to do. We've heard of a Hall of Fame hexer, curser, all right, who's about 350 miles north of land called Pethor. His name is Balaam. We're going to hire him. We can't fight Israel, but we can curse them through this Hall of Fame cursor. And he's going to demand a mighty wage, but he is worth every single penny.
We're going to learn more in our next episode, our next conversation with Dr. Lessing. We're taking a look at Hope in the Wilderness, Practical Insights from the Book of Numbers. And we'll continue that conversation with Dr. Lessing in our next episode, which is coming up. Let's see, we've got one more coming up next week. I think it's next Wednesday on the 26th. So I hope you can join us for that as well, to enjoy Hope in the Wilderness with Dr. Lessing. Reverend Dr. Reed Lessing, Professor of Theology and Ministry, Paul Edwin F. and Esther L. Lesch, Chair of Old Testament Studies, Director of Pre-Seminary Program, and the Director of the Center for Biblical Studies at Concordia University, St. Paul. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.